people could just get what they wanted, we would have to swallow our own moral problem with governments providing people with really, really dangerous hard narcotics, which is, I think, a stigma that people is actually what's preventing this from getting to a better place. But if all of those things could exist, would you support that? Or do you feel like we need to get, like, tough on drugs? Like, where do you ultimately stand on this stuff? I'm still trying to figure it out.
I kind of have a theory that every time somebody equates, you know, bartenders to fentanyl dealers, another conservative politician is going to be elected at some point down the line. And I kind of feel the same way about, I feel like that about some of these protests going on in residential neighborhoods in our city, that every time there's one of those, a conservative politician is getting elected. But in terms of...
You're saying that the people who want to say, oh, it's no big deal if I can buy beer, why can't I get fentanyl? No, they're very different things.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, some of the things you're talking about, it's never good enough. So now you have some people on the other side saying, well, okay, maybe not having them so close to schools and daycares is a reasonable consideration. Well, that wasn't what they were saying before. And
you know, I know you've been fighting people about a lot, but I'm asking you about a magical world in which the mental health issue is also addressed.
Yeah,
if they had security, if they had mental health services, and they had decriminalized legal hard narcotics that were, it's strange to call them non-toxic because you can die from these substances even when they're perfectly pure. But if all of those things existed, do you oppose that? Because the only other option I'm aware of is the tough on drugs, like, I don't know, you could either throw them in jail.
I think this needs to be addressed first and foremost as a mental health crisis. And we're not currently doing that. The announcement that the Ford government made about these hard hubs, there is some, it sounds like that is one of the focuses of them, that they are planning to have mental health care as part of them. We'll see. I think that legalizing drugs is a non-starter. I don't think there's any political will to do it. So having that conversation is pretty much a waste of time. I think the Trudeau government is very, very gun shy on harm reduction right now. They know it's not helping them in the polls. And you've got Poilievre, as you just stated a little while ago, who's taking advantage of the unhappiness around that.
You and I know that there are a lot of people whose concern about these issues begins and ends with what they individually have to experience. They don't like to look at it. They don't like to see it. And whether or not it's actually a risk for them, they want it gone. And if these people go and die in a ditch, they're probably okay with that. There's a lot of, I think.
There's probably some people like that for sure. And a lot of those people vote.
Yeah. So what do you want to see happen? Because I'm still struggling to kind of figure out
where I stand.
Yeah. I mean, look, Jesse, I think it's very reasonable to not want the situation in your neighborhood that you described. That's super reasonable.
I don't think these sites are feasible because, especially in a community health center, I don't think a community health center has the ability to control what goes on outside of their building. They don't. They're only really focused on have the staff and understaffed, as you said, and they really only have the ability to control what goes on inside. And as we already talked about, they can't control the drug dealers. Who can control the drug dealers? The police. Does the site want the police there? No. Is the Metro Toronto Police going to be focusing a lot of effort on some drugs, some small, you know, drug dealers around a supervised injection site that's rife with political divisiveness? No. So where does that leave the people who live and operate businesses around it? It leaves them wondering, should this be here? Should a site like this be within 200 meters of schools and daycares? My personal view is no, it shouldn't be. Now the Ford government decided they're not opening anymore. Now, do I agree with that? Well, I didn't have a say. You know, my neighborhood was never consulted. Neither were the harm reduction advocates. None of us were consulted. And so neither side. So you know, the government made the decision they made. They're closing down 10 of these sites that are too close to schools.
Yes.
They've come up with a plan to open 19 of these, they're calling them heart hubs, that have a whole list, laundry list of services that are going to be customized to whatever neighborhood they're in. And so it's not like they didn't do anything. Now, these places haven't opened yet, so we can't, you know, critique them or analyze them.
They're closing 10 out of 38 sites that exist across the country. Ontario's closing 10. More than a quarter of the sites that exist are being closed.
10 of 17 sites in Ontario. You know, the other thing is a lot of people make a big stink about the fact that Doug Ford isn't allowing these to move to another location or he's not allowing any new ones. But the truth is, Jesse, we didn't know, okay, what, as I said in the beginning, what this was going to turn out to be. These places, in order to get their federal drug law exemption from Health Canada to operate in the first place, they have to basically demonstrate community buy-in. And now, given that everything that's happened around our site and other sites, we don't need Pierre Poilievre or any other politician saying anything. People already know what these sites mean and what they bring. And the odds of any community, yours, Summerhill, Rosedale.
Nobody wants.
And I can almost guarantee that nowhere is going. These sites are done because no communities at this point, it's extremely unlikely that they're going to get buy-in. So what Ford did was, in a way, the writing was already on the wall.
I think you're right. I think you're going to win. This was a nascent little experimental thing that we had 38 of in Canada. 10 are gone. Whatever the new ones are, they're probably not going to be quite the same. And I think it's going to be incredibly hard. Maybe they could have moved into some industrial area where, like, who knows if the addicts could even get there. Is that winning? If you kill this thing, is that a victory?
No, I don't see it. I don't see that. I think it's a net positive for our neighborhood in the sense that.
And I'm not you got to do what's right for you and your kids. Like,
no,
like I'm not saying that's nothing.
But I don't think, look, this is a serious problem. And I have a brother, as I said earlier, who's only a year younger than me. He's lived on the streets for almost 20 years. He's a paranoid schizophrenic. And this might be part of the reason why I see this as a mental health crisis.
Isn't it all of these things?
Well,
your mental health crisis becomes an addiction crisis once you're addicted.
Well, and it's also a homeless crisis.
Yeah.
I mean, the homeless crisis is largely fueled by mental health problems as well.
I mean, it's like everything that you're fueling this argument with could lead to a conclusion of we need to vastly multiply the social services.
We do. We do. And that's why we haven't done it, because it's incredibly expensive. So when my brother gets picked up because he gets in a fight at the Toronto Public Library for trying to use a computer, or somebody's trying to butt in on him, or you know, I get calls from a psychiatrist saying, hey, we have your brother. We've picked him up because he's been deemed either a threat to himself or a threat to someone else. Would you like to come and pick him up?
Yeah.
And my answer is, no, I'm not coming to get my brother because he's paranoid schizophrenic. He's been violent. I don't want him around my children. And our system doesn't allow family members to do anything. When he first went on the streets, his doctor said, you know, your brother is most likely going to die with his rights. And that is what's happening. He's free to live on the streets and nobody's going to pick him up and put him in an asylum like we did back in 1890. But he's going to die out there. To be honest with you, if it was me, if I was the health minister, I would take the money that is put into these supervised consumption sites and I would put it into non-physical address outreach workers who can go to the people where they are, mobile offerings.
They had some stuff like that in Thunder Bay when I was reporting there.
Yeah, that I would put all my money to that, and our site was running without any on-site psychiatric care. Like, that's not, that. To me, if you look at the numbers, I mean, even if you just look with your own eyes at what's going on around it, who the clients are and what the problems are they're having and how they're suffering and the psychosis they're suffering from, it's so clearly, to a large extent, a mental health crisis. Even the people in the sites wish they had more access to psychiatric care.
There is no easy solution to this. Well, I don't know where to leave this, but to say that, I feel like the battle that you've been fighting, you're going to win. I worry about what we're going to be left with.
So do I.
Really appreciate you talking with me about this, Derek.
Thanks, Jesse. It's good to be here.
That's your Canada Land podcast. You can email me at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. Our website is canadaland.com. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing from Caleb Thompson. Max Collins is our production manager. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we are talking about the news. We're going to talk about the Liberal MP who has been called out on Instagram by another Liberal MP. Mostly, we're going to talk about how much the press hates and openly disrespects Jagmeet Singh, and how this time, they might be wrong about it. Canadian journalism royalty is with us. It is Jan Wong, professor, writer, teacher, scholar. How you doing? Welcome back to the show.
Royalty. That's so last century, but thank you.
We're starting with the top story in Ottawa. The NDP's deal with the Liberals is over.
I notified the Prime Minister that I've ripped up the supply and confidence agreement.
And now sellout Singh has pulled a stunt.
Why he dumped the boyfriend, but is still seeing him behind his back.
There's nothing more important to these greedy politicians than collecting a pension.
It's not even a very dignified way to break up.
It's a pure political calculation decision.
Jan, I want to catch up with you on this news of Jagmeet Singh and the NDP's decision to tear up the deal with the Liberals. The press has really been giving it to him. Like, people do not think much of this guy. Can I read some headlines to you?
Yes, please.
This spans left to right. National Observer, Jagmeet Singh just played himself. National Post, Jagmeet Singh faces demolishing what's left of his credibility. Globe and Mail, opinion piece. Jagmeet Singh says to NDP caucus, we've accomplished basically nothing, so our work here is done. The Hub, conservative publication The Hub, how Trudeau duped Singh and Polyev schooled them both. The Beaverton, dunking on Jagmeet Singh. Jagmeet Singh asserts independence by doing exactly what Pierre Polyev told him to. Everybody thinks this guy is an absolute clown. Like, it's just headline after headline. Am I an idiot in thinking this might be a smart move from Jagmeet Singh?
Well, I hate to say, but I totally agree with you. And I don't understand why the media is all talking out of the same, you know, template. I think it's brilliant.
Maybe we're both idiots.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's look at the situation here. He's had this alliance and he can claim that this was just practical politics. I wasn't going to be prime minister, but I could actually get dental care and some things done through this alliance. But now the Trudeau popularity is in the toilet and they've shaved off, I don't know, it was like 15, 20 points. None of that action's gone to me. It's all gone to Polyev. I'll just continue going down with him. But he hasn't gained anything, which is embarrassing. All of that has shifted over to Polyev. But he hasn't really lost anything either, because what he's done is he's divorced himself from Trudeau. He's lashing out at Trudeau and saying they're not up for the job of taking on Polyev, but we are.
Trudeau's Liberals can't deliver change. They are too weak and too selfish to stop Pierre Polyev and the Conservatives. In the next federal election, Canadians will get to choose between Polyev's conservative cuts or the hopeful future that new Democrats can bring.
I think the timing was good. I think it's a smart move. He's got through as best he could the dental care and the pharma care. Trudeau is tanking. There's a by-election coming up in Montreal-Verdun, September 16th. It's just enough time to break. And I think it was like before he was like Mike Pence and now he's Kamala Harris. I think he's figured it out. And I don't understand why the Canadian media was all asking these stupid questions. They were just irritatingly dumb. Like, oh, well, if you think he's such a loser, why did you stick with him for so long? Well, that's called, you know, a coalition government. And those are sometimes our best governments. That's how we got Medicare. Tommy Douglas was a minority in the government. He had a coalition and he pushed that through. That was his condition. And I think Singh is seeing what's going to happen. He's seeing Trudeau is not leaving, even though his own Liberals want him out. So he's made a very astute choice. And I'm surprised we both agree. This is like the only time agree. So I'm a little nervous.
Well, I know. I mean, I have my own bias here. And my bias is that this is interesting. It's the first interesting thing to happen in Canadian federal politics mm-hmm. in a while. So I'm like, oh, like maybe this guy's up to something because, you know, it's kind of do or die. I think it's his last stand. But if he can make this work, there is a reality that I can see where he ends up the official opposition. Like, this isn't a play to be prime minister.
Or who knows, right?
I know he's not prime minister.
You know, I always dream big.
You bring up the way the media is responding, asking him dumb questions about his previous support for the Liberals. Why did you support them for so long if you felt so poorly of them? They're also asking him, like, they think they've really got him with this one line of questioning. I want to play you this clip here of like, they've been hammering him with these questions about now that he's taken a swing at the Liberals, well, does that mean that he's going to, like, bring them down tomorrow and they keep hammering him on that? First, here is Brian Lilly from the Toronto Sun grilling Jagmeet.
You've said about a dozen times at least that you've ripped up the agreement and that that makes an election more likely. But you've been asked several times and you won't answer. Do you have confidence in the Trudeau government as they stand now?
I will be clear again. We have absolutely ripped up the agreement with Justin Trudeau, and that means an election is more likely.
That's not clear. You're
clear. And an election, whenever that election comes, we'll be ready to fight it. And the vision around that election is going to be an important one. Canadians will have to make a choice.
But can we get an answer?
Corporate-controlled conservatives, they're going to let their corporate buddies rip you off even more, or New Democrats are going to save you money on your rent and your groceries. That's a choice that Canadians will have to make.
Can we get an answer?
I will look at any vote that comes before us, and we will make a decision in the best interest of Canadians, as any minority government normally operates.
And here is a tough interview from CTV's chief political correspondent Vashi Kapelos interviewing Jagmeet Singh.
You stayed in it as long as you did to get things done. So if those things aren't done, why aren't you continuing to stay in it unless there's some kind of political interest in it for you to move to a different position, which is what the Liberals essentially are accusing you of. They say blatantly, Karina Gold on this
dental
program last night, you put your own interests ahead of Canadians.
Dental care is done.
Do you not feel like you bear any responsibility for being unable to capitalize on the Liberals' fall from grace among Canadians?
We're going to be running to form government in the next election. I'm running for prime minister.
Respectfully, that's not really an answer. Like, are you worried at all about the fact that you haven't
been able...
Respectfully,
that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm running for prime minister. I'm running to beat the conservatives. I'm running to make sure that this country has someone that's going to be on their side.
She hammers them, and she's been praised for this interview, Jan, that this is a real tough accountability interview.
Oh, I think it's embarrassing.
Why? Tell me.
Well, okay. So, first of all, this confidence. Do you have confidence in the Trudeau government? Confidence is a technical parliamentary term. It's there's certain kinds of votes that if they get defeated, the government falls. That's what it means for confidence. When they're asking him, do you have confidence in the Trudeau government? That's not the same thing. They're using the term in a sneaky way. It's just like a stupid question. He's going to go issue by issue and he's going to decide. And the reporters know that, but they don't care. They just want to make him look like he's dodging. Do you have confidence in the Trudeau government is not the question. And the second one, it was like, she's saying, I'm asking you respectfully, blah, blah, blah. I can see why people don't want to watch TV anymore. And to say, you know, oh, he's so political. Well, they are literally politicians.
He's a politician. That's the part that embarrassed me was when she's like she really thought she had something there. Like, I'm going to ask you once again, are you doing this for idealistic reasons? Or are you just being political?
Yeah.
He's a politician. So the question is, like, if you were a man of integrity and you hate the Liberals so much, you wouldn't vote for them on anything. And he can very easily answer, I am a pragmatic person who is going to vote for what's best for people. And if the Liberals have a really good... Like, no, we know that that's not necessarily true. He's going to try to time it for the best time possible for his chances to...
Because he's a politician.
Because he's a politician! Like, is that... Like, that's what she's trying to reveal, that he's a politician.
What's sad is that by making this simplistic, there is no attention being paid to any policy. They're just trying to get a gotcha moment with this foolish conflation of the two meanings of confidence. And I really do blame the media, and I'm just shocked. And I'm a reporter and I like reporters. And I'm going, is no one awake in the newsroom? What are the editors doing? Like, why are they not in the ear of the reporter saying, don't ask that. You've already asked that. Ask him about specific policies. Like, what issue would he vote against? What is the critical budget issue that he would vote against the government to trigger an election? Because the thing is not going to be popular when he finally does trigger this, because Canadians hate elections. They hate going to elections.
I think that's why they're mad at him. They're like, answer me again. Can I plan my vacation for this fall or not?
I don't get it.
I'll ask you one more time. The tickets are non-refundable.
I know. It's like, can we get a little content here? Why are we listening to these shouting questions? And then they post it on their Twitter account thinking they're so heroic. It's like, come on, you're asking the same stupid question. It's a stupid question. Stop asking it. Once is bad enough. I actually feel sorry for Jagmeet Singh.
I mean, look, you know, you can't act super surprised. The Canadian media has historically refused to show respect or give adequate coverage to the NDP, right? Like, and, you know, we revere and glorify Jack Layton now, but while he was alive, they took every shot at him that they could.
Yes.
They refused to take the NDP seriously, and then they say, oh, why don't people take the NDP seriously? And I also feel like there might be some level of racism in the Jagmeet Singh coverage.
Yes.
He is not just a racialized person, but he's, as I've covered before on Canada, he's a snappy dresser. He's more peacocky than Canadian politicians typically are, though in a Justin Trudeau era, I'm not sure if that still holds.
I don't know about the racism. I can't tell, but his treatment is embarrassing, the way the media is treating him.
I'm often paralyzed by seeing things from too many perspectives at once. And while I feel like strategically this is a super smart and interesting thing, I also have never heard the guy open his mouth and felt myself like rise to my feet and thought, that is so well said. That is a great speaker. This guy's smart as a tack. I've never been impressed with the guy. So,
yeah,
you know, that might be part of this as well.
But it's all relative, right? You line him up against Justin and Polly Ever, and it's like, oh, okay.
It ain't Mensa. Jan Wong, duly noted, you're up first.
Sure. I'll start off talking about TIFF, which is going on right now in Toronto, the Toronto International Film Festival. And I just like to say, it doesn't feel very international. Their definition of international seems to be Hollywood, white people, Europe. And yes, they do other films, of course. I'm not blaming TIFF as much as I'm blaming the media coverage. Like, they all want to go, oh, this star is in town, and they're all the Hollywood people. And I think the media is ignoring Korean culture, for instance. I'm really a big fan of Korean films. And they had this big star come in, Hoon Bin, and he's the lead actor on Crash Landing on You, and he's done a whole bunch of other stuff. And I just think the media is so focused on people who can speak English, and they're missing the fact that the city of Toronto is so diverse. But you don't have to be Korean. I don't know any Korean. I've never been to Korea. I'm totally into the Korean films. And the interesting thing behind this is the Korean government deliberately decided to promote their culture as an export in the 1990s. And it's called the Hallyu, which means the Korean wave, because they saw this as a way, you'll love this, to market Korean products like LG and Kia cars. You watch these films and it's hilarious because they really promote this stuff.
But Parasite and everything else that had this huge artistic kind of wave, this huge renaissance and interest.
Yeah, Parasite won the Oscar, and you have all the K-pop. I don't like K-pop. BTS, that's not my thing.
But was government policy, huh? That was government cultural policy.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
They funded it. In Canada, we're always talking about funding the arts. Korea definitely went all out to fund it. And they're making a lot of money off it, their Korean dramas and their own products. The LG stove. I just bought an LG stove.
It works.
It works.
The marketing works. Well, shut my cultural subsidy critical mouth. Duly noted. Can I share a story that I don't think people paid nearly enough attention to?
Sure.
We have been covering, for a long time now, this story about this brain disease in New Brunswick and the cover-up. And that story has had some developments. A lot of it is just because other media have started paying attention. Some Canadian media, but really noteworthy, the New York Times and People magazine, of all things, have picked up the story on what is going on with this unexplained and debilitating disease in New Brunswick that hundreds and hundreds of people are suffering from, and why won't the government try to find out? What I want to duly note today is one, I think, pretty major progression in this story and pretty remarkable thing to have happen. An MP from Fredericton, Jenica Atwin, who is a Liberal MP, published a very terse open letter to the Liberal Minister of Health, Mark Holland, about this issue. This is a Liberal MP publicly calling out the Liberal Health Minister. Dear Minister Holland, I'm writing to you today out of grave concern regarding the cluster of neurological illnesses in New Brunswick. As you are well aware, the Provincial Oversight Committee stated in 2022 that all the 48 cases they studied were quote-unquote known illnesses, and they sidelined any potential federal studies. This is what Canada Land reported. And we're seeing this here, like an inter-liberal calling out here. And she is reminding the health minister that under the Department of Health Act, it is the legal duty of Public Health Canada to step in and study the epidemiology and pathology of such a public health anomaly. And she actually included the hashtag on her Instagram post of this letter, hashtag glyphosate. Glyphosate is the herbicide that is linked to this unexplained debilitating neurological disease. It is used extensively in New Brunswick by the forestry industry. And the biggest company that has been pushing for years to keep this legal on behalf of glyphosate use is the biggest forestry company in New Brunswick, Irving Limited.
Okay, so let me jump in here with just a few little things. I know this is your duly noted, but I have to say a couple of things. Blaine Higgs, the premier of New Brunswick, because I used to work there, he worked for Irving for 33 years. Like, there's a connection here. And the government, it wasn't Blaine Higgs himself, I think, it was a previous government that fired the chief medical officer of health, Eilish Cleary. She was in the middle of researching glyphosate. She just got fired and they said, oh, it had nothing to do with her research. And then one last thing I want to add about Jenica Atwin. She was the MP in my riding in Fredericton, and she originally ran as a Green, and all the students were helping her win and putting up money. I probably donated to her campaign because it seemed like very hard for the Greens to get in. And then she won, and guess what? She crossed the floor. So I was really mad at her, but I'm so glad she wrote this letter. So there's a lot of interesting stuff happening in New Brunswick with the power, right? I would love to know if she's talked to Blaine Higgs about this letter that she wrote to her own health minister. It's very interesting. I don't know what's happening, but maybe it's the media coverage. Maybe it's been a little embarrassing for New Brunswick to have Canada Land and the New York Times and People magazine all descending on them.
It's hard to get people outside of Atlantic Canada to care about New Brunswick, but this story is going to be increasingly a big deal, is my prediction. And it's a story that we have played a big role. I'll credit Sarah Larniak and other people here for doing that, and Cherie Sutrin, but it's not a story that began with us. And Jack Poitras for CBC has been doing a lot of coverage of the Irvings and of the glyphosate file and what's going on with research in New Brunswick and academia and what's going on with lobbying. It's all part of the same story. I'll duly note all of it for you.
Duly noted.
Okay, that's our show for today. Thank you for joining me. Listen, you may have noticed that we have been making some changes to the format of this show. Love to know what you think about it. Email me at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything that you send. This episode was produced by James Nicholson with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our production manager is Max Collins. Theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
We're all aware of the challenges our online spaces present, like online hate and the spread of misinformation. But how can the average person make our online world more positive? Studies have shown it takes just 10% of the people in a community to set its values. We're all digital citizens, and we all have a role to play. Join Media Smarts, Canada's Centre for Digital Media Literacy, on October 23rd for Digital Citizen Day to help make our online world a better place to be. Visit digitalcitizenday.ca to find out how you can make a difference.
Hey, this is Anuki, your Faculty of Environment representative, here to let you know what the SFSS is. The SFSS is a student union that is student-led, and it represents and advocates for the interests of the 26,000 undergraduate students at SFU. We are a non-for-profit support network and a voice at SFU, which provides services like the UPass and health and dental. We also provide support to make your student life better. You can reach the SFSS on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or by emailing us. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you.